Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today in Kansas City. All right, Patrick Mahomes, the NFL's reigning MVP, is a better player than he was a year ago. Through three games, Mahomes is on pace to throw for 6,373 yards, 53 touchdowns, and zero interceptions. He's doing it without the services of his most explosive receiver, Tyreek Hill, who was injured early in week one. The best player in football looks like Secretariat rounding the final turn at the 1973 Belmont Stakes. The distance between Mahomes and his peers is lengthening. Strangely, the Chiefs are gaining no ground on the reigning Super Bowl champs, the New England Patriots. Yesterday, Kansas City ran its record to 3-0 for the third consecutive season. The Chiefs knocked off the previously unbeaten Baltimore Ravens 33-28. I was not impressed, and neither were the Ravens. Baltimore safety Earl Thomas summarized my feelings when he said, "We're going to see them again, and when we see them down the line, we're going to have it." Any boxing historians watching today? Yesterday's Ravens-Chiefs game reminded me of the 1980 brawl in Montreal, Roberto Duran versus Sugar Ray Leonard. In an attempt to quiet the critics who questioned his toughness, Sugar Ray stood toe-to-toe against the man nicknamed Hands of Stone. Bad strategy. Duran pounded Sugar into butter and won a unanimous decision.
Butter.
4 months later, in a rematch in New Orleans, Sugar Ray returned to his dancing style and made Duran say, "No mas," after eight rounds. Baltimore coach John Harbaugh tried to be cute on Sunday. He asked Lamar Jackson and the Ravens to go toe-to-toe, point for point, pass for pass with Patrick Mahomes. Bad strategy. Harbaugh went for two every two-point conversion every fourth and short and kept asking Jackson to throw long. The Ravens danced when they should have played field position football and pounded Kansas City with their running game. Mark Ingram averaged 6 yards per carry and scored three touchdowns. His 16 carries were half as many as necessary. Same as a year ago, Kansas City has the worst starting inside linebackers in football, and I'm including all of Division I and a handful of high schools in that statement.
Don't do that.
The Chiefs' soft defense is going to once again nullify Mahomes' brilliance. Football is still football. It's a game of physicality. Defense still wins championships. The Chiefs aren't good enough on defense to win a rematch with the Ravens or beat the Patriots in the postseason. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst Tony Gonzalez and TJ Houspenzada. Marcel, let's get us rolling.
Yeah.
Were you impressed by the Chiefs on Sunday?
Absolutely. You got to understand, one, give credit to two high-level teams playing that same way in that performance yesterday. What I think happens naturally is when you see a team that was great last year and then you have greater expectations for them and you don't see them blow out another team, all of a sudden, what's wrong with this team? Instead of saying, what's right with Lamar Jackson and what's right with the Ravens? So I give both of them teams respect in how they went out there and performed in tightly contested ball game. You got to look at what happened to the Chiefs before they even stepped on the field. They were without three players on every single level. No Tyreek Hill. No Eric Fisher, no Damian Williams. So you're affected offensively already before you even go out there. He needs those guys to be the same team that's going to take a step forward as you expect from last year. So now you look at this team and they go out there and they're playing a team that took them to overtime in this same situation last year with a much lesser quarterback in Lamar Jackson as a rookie. So if you do that calculation, you can realize, oh, the Ravens are really good. And they played very well. Not as well as expected based on game plan. We'll talk about that. But, damn, the Chiefs injured, hobbled. still went out there and beat a team that was a playoff team last year. Give credit to both teams, but even more credit to the Chiefs.
I am impressed, and it's sad that the Chiefs are that good that their expectations are here now for everybody.
Yeah.
When you beat a good Baltimore team, number one, Baltimore defensively, to put 33 points up on them with that defense, and the Chiefs' defense has been bad. You lose D4, you lose Justin Houston, you add Frank Clark. He hadn't done much. You lose Eric Berry, you add Matthew. So the guys that they lost and the guys, it's a push. Their defense wasn't good last year, so it's no surprise that they're not any good this year. Give Baltimore credit and say, yeah, they went toe-for-toe with them, but they lost. It was at home. It is what it is. But the Chiefs now have set expectations so high that when they win a game in the National Football League, it's like, I'm not really impressed. A win's
six
a win.
6 yards a carry.
But it don't matter. You can average 12 yards a carry if I win a game. I don't care.
Okay, you said it right there. A win is a win is a win. And they got it. I don't care what happens, the outcome during the game. Now, there's corrections that you want to make and mistakes you want to go out there and make sure that you don't do that again. But looking at that team, holy smokes. We're on live television.
Okay. Oh,
watch out, we didn't get you.
We're good.
Can we keep going? You make mistakes like this, and it probably won't ever happen again on this show because I'm not going to do it again. But I think Patrick Mahomes, the way he played really, really impressed me, going against a real good defense.
Yeah.
I think that kid right there, you talked about does it hurt his chances and the brilliance of him. If anything, having a weaker defense means you're going to get more opportunities when you're out there. Thank you so much. When you're out there playing. And I think right now you're going to see those MVP-type numbers come up again. He could have 50 touchdowns again because of that defense. Now, you put a good defense out there, he's not going to be asked to do as much. So, as a fan, at least I get to see more Patrick Mahomes and go out there and play some ball.
As a fan, I want to see the Chiefs play in the postseason and win. And that defense not good enough against the Baltimore. Look, I really think Earl Thomas really believes that. Like, we should have made this a street fight. We're more physical than they are. That's a soft team. We got out of character and tried to go toe for toe with a team that we should have taken to the ground and just wrestled with them because the Chiefs' defense just can't handle it. They should have fed Mark Ingram the ball 25 times. I hate to say it, they should have run Lamar Jackson 12 to 15 times. I felt like the moment was a little too big for Lamar, and so he was a little bit off with his passing. They should have leaned on that running game, beat up the Chiefs, and I just don't see the Chiefs having an answer defensively.
Wrong. I love me some Earl Thomas. Respect. But I'm never a fan of a dude who just lost a ball game tomorrow. We got y'all next time. We just did 60 minutes, bro. You want 61 right now? Like, this whole forecast. Guess what? You're going to make adjustments and you're going to be better. They are too. So we don't know how that's going to play. It sounds great. It gets people excited at home. Ooh, next time. We just had a time. And they didn't go
Sugar Ray took 4 months, came right back in the ring. He knew he did the wrong
thing. And he made him quit.
Yeah, but you know what? You're making my point in this respect. It's not just how you play the game, it's when you play your cards in that same game. Think about this. This is a team that lost to them last year with a lesser quarterback, lesser team, Baltimore, on the road during the regular season. Then this year, you're playing the same team. What do you have in the bank? Which cards you know are your big jokers? You know you got you a defense. You know that, and you know you got your running game. And if you've been looking at Lamar Jackson every single week, he's been trending up and passes attempted. So last week was 37. This week they say, let's go 43. We want to see how much of this playbook we can unveil against the best. Because what does everyone up here say when they look good against Miami? When they look good against Arizona? Y'all ain't played nobody. So if I know I got insurance policies with defense and running game, when I play the best, I want to see Lamar Jackson. I may make him go ahead of his skis, a little too in front of his skis, just to calibrate. So when I see you next time, like Earl Thomas is saying, when it really counts, we got this thing corrected. So I respect their game plan. You got to see what Lamar Jackson could do in those surroundings against that team, because when it's bad weather in the playoffs, you think they're going to throw it 43 times?
You're making my point. And I don't think the Chiefs are going to survive that brawl come January. I think the Patriots and or Baltimore or any team that just commits to the running game is going to keep Patrick Mahomes on the sidelines and make the Chiefs exit the playoffs sooner than I would like.
And P. people keep forgetting the Chiefs' most explosive player didn't play and they still won the game.
That's what I'm saying.
So when your best offensive player outside of Patrick Mahomes doesn't play and you still win the game, it's Andy Reid.
Whoa. Patrick Mahomes is their most explosive player. Continue.
He said next. He said second. Next
to, oh, you said. Oh, yeah,
next, yeah. Oh, you hot up here. That's what we doing. That's what we doing up here.
No, it's but Andy Reid is, in my opinion, from the time I can remember football, he's probably the best offensive play caller in the history of football. Mm. He's so and people, these young guys, they watching his playbook and they're watching their games and copying and mimicking what he's doing with all the creativity. He's going to make adjustments. And so whatever
the
Ravens.
On the offensive side.
On the offensive side. And
that's the
Kansas
problem.
City is an offensive team.
Yeah.
That's okay. We're going to win games with our offense, defense. Just keep us in it. And that they've shown that. They've shown that's an effective way to get it done.
You remember 2003, our team out there with Priest Holmes and all those guys.
Dick Vermeil.
We went to the playoff. We started out 9-0. We had the worst defense in the NFL, and we had the best number one offense, highest scoring offense. And we went to the playoffs and got beat by Peyton Manning. Nobody punted in the game. Mm-hmm. This defense is better than that defense that we had. Just like you just said right there, that defense can just keep it around 15 to 20th ranked. They're going to outscore people. Just like last year, I know the New England Patriots won the Super Bowl and they went to, but that game that they lost, they had that game. If the guy didn't line up in the backfield on that one play where they threw it to Gronkowski, the game was over. It was intercepted. They should have won that game, in my opinion. They could do that again. They could ride this offense, high-caliber offense, with even a better Patrick Mahomes this year than he was last year. I believe they can take it all the way to the final game.
So y'all don't believe defense wins championship? The cliche?
No. In this case, no.
No. No, I don't believe that.
Just don't be terrible. Just be competent. Just be okay, and they can do it.
No, I don't believe that. We talked about it last week. The Rams last year had a 19th-ranked defense in the Super Bowl. The Chiefs right now, before this game, 19th-ranked defense can be in the Super Bowl. If you talk about who was in the Super Bowl, and they're going against the New England Patriots, who had their defensive struggles early last year. We were writing them off. You can fix this. This is a team right now that is going to be supremely confident in the Chiefs because they're missing assets and still looking great. It's just the expectations are so high right now, it doesn't land the same.
It's mind-blowing to me that Bill Belichick can have dominated the NFL for 20 years. 20 years, 9 Super Bowls, 6 titles. And we still think Sean McVay, Andy Reid, one of these other guys on the offensive side that are the gurus, somehow are better than the defensive genius. It doesn't compute to me. Defense still wins championships. The New England Patriots defense hasn't given up a touchdown all season. John Harbaugh and that defense is going to get better. I thought they made some errors and took, you know, a couple of – that game was very fluky. And look, I'm a Chiefs fan, and I certainly – you know, Patrick Mahomes, again, he's the best player I've ever seen maybe in my life. But they had to get lucky. That holding call on Willie Snead was bogus and BS. And, again, I know they had some luck, too. Lamar got away with a couple of long passes that he shouldn't have. But I'm sitting here in January, and I've seen this before. I've been watching the Chiefs closely since 1994. I've just seen they've never had a balance, ever. At one time under Derek Thomas and Neil Smith, it was the defense that carried the team. Then they brought in Dick Vermeil, and it was the offense that carried the team. The Chiefs are never in balance. They never play complementary football. They're always dependent on one side of the ball to win the game for them. And it in the postseason, and it just doesn't work.
Damn you, JD. It's okay. Mahomes, he didn't play in 94. Andy Reid wasn't there in 94. The Patriots' first 3 Super Bowls, it was lopsided. All defense. Tom Brady was trying to figure out. Bruh, played against him. Yeah, that was all defense. You remember, you want to have Mangini come up here and talk about early Tom Brady? Do y'all want to do this? And it's unfair to just say the rankings have been lopsided before for champions. The St. Louis Rams.
You could say that one right there. That was the greatest show on turf, and they still went there and won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so it could be lopsided.
One Super Bowl.
Yeah, it could be
Belichick's lopsided. Belichick's won 6. Yeah. All right, Darnell, did we miss anything?
Yeah, man, so yesterday I tweeted out that the Ravens would beat the Chiefs.
Yeah, that was dumb.
I was a little wrong on that. But anyway, Lamar Jackson didn't have his best game, as you guys stated. Only throwing for 267 yards with no passing touchdowns. Lamar's stats look a little different against winning teams with his completion percentage, passing yards per attempt, and passer rating all dropping in comparison to playing against all other teams. I want to ask you guys, do you think these numbers say anything about Lamar?
It says a little bit, but I'm saying this and I mean it. I was impressed with Lamar yesterday. I expected Lamar to turn the ball over a couple of times, and I thought that would be the difference in the game. I thought the moment, and I said this earlier, was a little bit too big. He was anxious. I think this strategy, we're going to go in here and outscore Patrick Mahomes, put a little pressure on him, and his deep ball was off because he put a little too much pressure on himself, anxiety. But I had no problem with the way Lamar played. I think he'll be better moving on the rest of the season.
Yeah, no problem. These numbers don't mean too much to me. One, he's only lost two regular season games, and that was by 3 and 5 points in the most difficult stadium to play in on the road, Arrowhead. So no slight there. Two, when you play lesser opponents, you're supposed to play better. What's the old adage? You're supposed to beat the
team. Had your stats.
You know, supposed to beat the team. You know when I had the fewest sacks? When I had Walter Jones,
Jonathan Ogden, yeah. Orlando Pace.
Those were a little different days when I had the pork chops. So I'm not reading too much into it.
Yeah, I don't read into it either. It's when you play good teams, you're not going to play as well as when you play bad teams. That's what it is. And when you play the bad teams, just try to pad your stats because you know when you play the good team, it's going to drop.
Simple. Can we get a Hall of Fame perspective? Right, you buying this?
You know, I think it goes both ways. My best games have come out against my best competition, against New England Patriots. Those
That's
are my
why
two
you're
best
in the
games
Hall of Fame.
I'm about to say, he just
and
shut up.
Pro bowlers.
No, I'm just telling you, when I look at
they were
it,
pro bowlers.
Hey, man, wait a minute. Hall of good. We in the Hall of good over
but also my worst game has come against the New England Patriots when Bill Belichick said, hey, you're not going to do anything today. I had one catch for 13 yards. So it can go both ways. But Lamar, he's on his way. Yeah. He's on his way. The only thing that concerns me about him is that he's running the ball too much, taking those shots. I don't know how long he can last. Maybe about 2-3 years.
Hey, guys. This is Jason Whitlock from Speak for Yourself. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save enough money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for the future or visit pacificlife.com.
Tony Gonzalez and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back.
Hey,
time now for a big story. All right, let's move to Cleveland, where Baker Mayfield and the Browns came up just short against the Rams last night, blowing four chances to tie the game from inside the 5-yard line. It was another lousy game for Baker Mayfield, who completed just half of his passes for under 200 yards. But Coach Freddie Kitchens might have had an even worse night with some mind-boggling play calls, including a draw on 4th and 9. After the game, Baker took the loss in stride.
Don't hit the panic button. I think we realize how close we are, but that's the frustrating part, is we can't have continued mistakes. You know, the same thing over and over again. We have to do our job and have to hit the reset button, look at the film, learn from it.
Don't blame any of our players. Don't blame any of our other coaches. Just blame me because I can take it, all right? So, you know, just blame me. Go write your article and say I messed the game up. Go write your article and say it's my fault the thing's not looking like it did last year because it is.
I agree with Freddie Kitchens. I blame Freddie Kitchens, but who should they be more concerned about, Baker Mayfield or Freddie Kitchens?
I think it's Baker Mayfield, and it's close. Look, they both are fighting for this position of who's going to take the lion's share of the blame, but Junior Seau, late great Hall of Famer, my boy, my teammate, rest in peace, used to always play by the mantra, ball before call. That means, even in the dictionary, he's ball before call. So no matter what they call, your objective of any call is to ball, is to make that play happen. We saw it even from rookies who just have that instinct. Daniel Jones, they come out in a situation, everybody running man. He's like, why isn't no one guarding me? I just run up the middle and win the ball game. There are certain moments when you're supposed to take over. When you look at Baker Mayfield by the numbers, 3 touchdown passes, 5 interceptions, passer rating down 20 from last year. And then you're looking at it, there's no mojo. That was a lot of talk coming into the season and no mojo into this season. 2 games that they've lost been at home, got spanked week 1. So it gets to a certain point. Yeah, coaches always make a questionable play call, But it's on us. The onus is on us to go out there and make something happen.
Oh, it's 100% all on Freddie Kitchens. You only can run what's called. Like, Nick Chubb was averaging over 4 yards a carry. You get the ball first and goal on a 4 yard line, and
you pass
every play. Four. Come on, run the ball. If you put Baker in favorable positions, he'll give you favorable results. You say, oh, his completion percentage, the picks or whatnot. It's the play calls. It's what Freddie Kitchens is doing that's putting him in a predicament. He's putting him in a position where he can't be successful. It's pure. And Freddie Kitchens, like his whole little press conference, it was like he was upset. Blame me. It's 100% your fault, and he should fix it, period.
Okay, why can't they both get blamed here? But I guess if you want to give more, I would probably go with the coach because I think it's a cultural problem going on out there in Cleveland right now. I think they bought into that hype. I bought into that hype. First game of the season, I was spouting off like, oh, this team is going to the playoffs. They got the incredible roster, and they do. They have talented players on that team, offensively and defensively. They should all be playing a lot better than what's going on out there. But Freddie Kitchens, it starts at the top. He's the one who's making the calls. He's the one setting the culture in the locker room. He needs to tell them to stop making all those commercials. I see Baker Mayfield on every other commercial. I'm not saying it's bad, but let's earn that first. Mm. You had one good year. Go out there and play the way he can because we know he can play better. He is not playing like he did last year, and he's got better receivers. I don't understand it right now. I think he's got to get back to the drawing board. Like he said, don't push panic yet, and I agree with you, Baker. But at the same time, you got to start doing some soul searching and get better. And go talk to Freddie. Go have a one-on-one and say, why didn't you trust me in this situation? I think right now there's trust issues, culture issues. There's a lot of stuff going on in Cleveland right now.
Look, I think that I'm going to take it up another level and blame the executives, the ownership of the Cleveland Browns. You have a very young quarterback. You add OBJ to this situation in Cleveland, and then you get into your coaching search. Greg Williams has just been your head coach and won you a bunch of games, and you let Baker Mayfield basically talk you in, hey, my boy Freddie over here, little chubby dude with unshaven, looks like, you know, he's been out to drink and hung over all night. Let's make him the head coach. And that's what you got. You got total chaos. They're jumping off sides. The whole thing looked raggedy from start to finish from them. Myles Garrett, another talented player, has, I think, been leading the league in penalties or whatever. This looks like chaos, and it starts way up. They picked the wrong guy to be the head coach. Should have left him there as the offensive coordinator. You got this whole young offense that you're trying to build around. And again, let's go over to the Los Angeles Rams, who maybe they got caught up in, hey, they picked an inexperienced head coach, and he worked. They also gave him Wade Phillips, one of the most experienced coaches in all of football, to run one half of the team. I just think Freddie Kitchens is in over his head. Baker Mayfield certainly has some problems. I'm not a fan of short quarterbacks. And that includes, and again, I'm not, Drew Brees is a Hall of Famer, great player. Russell Wilson's going to be in the Hall of Fame. But small quarterbacks are not my thing. They bail out of the pocket instead of stepping up in the pocket. They got to be coached out of it.
Got to be able to see, have a throw line.
And so you bail out instead of stepping up. And again, you got to be coached out of it. And Russell Wilson and Drew Brees have learned that. Baker Mayfield hasn't.
Watching that game closely, we all saw the same thing, especially from a defensive mindset. He has some simple tendencies. Happy feet, bail right, and is going to launch it. Like, and so you all of a sudden start to call for those same moments because it doesn't take much to get him into his tendencies. You talk about the first and goal, basically, on four straight passes. Is it the coach or is it you when you throw the game-ending interception, but before that, incompletion, pass batted down, and a pass too high? Like, if you throw it where it's supposed to go, is it a bad call? Like, the results tell us it's a bad call, but the results tell me, because I've been in situations like that before, you know, we first game they had 20 penalties, 18 because two were called back. That's on coach. When I jump off sides, everyone says it's a discipline, it's a cultural issue. You could blame coach, you could blame me because I am not doing the right things. And I don't think with a guy with 57% in completion percentage is doing the right things. No matter what you give him right now, it's not turning into success in part because I don't think he has his mojo.
It's not bad in Cleveland. All is not lost. Everybody expecting them to lose to the Rams. They lose to the Rams in a game that they probably could have won, and it's, oh, my God, the sky's falling. I'm not going to take it that far. Freddie Kitchens is to blame. The Rams turn the ball over three times. You're playing at home. You have a chance to win the game in a game that everybody expects you to lose anyway. And so that's probably the biggest problem. Everybody expects you to lose. You had at least you could at least force overtime. They weren't able to do that, and play calling played a big part in that.
I look at emotional coaches, and Freddie looked a little emotional. I'm not saying he was over emotional.
Oh, very.
And I look at Bill Belichick. You can go back there, and you talk about culture. That would never happen in New England. You're not jumping off sides. You're not getting 18 penalties. It just doesn't happen. And we've talked to people that have played for that team because it's not allowed. It's a culture thing there. So I do think culture does matter, and I think it starts with the head coach. I've had a lot of coaches in Kansas City, and when you get the emotional ones, the team plays that way. And they're overly aggressive sometime on the defensive side of the ball. You see Myles Garrett, the way he's getting penalties right now, that's a reflection of their defensive coordinator. That's how he coaches. Yeah. I'm just saying the discipline has to come from the top, and that will affect the play of the players.
I'm going to make another distinction between Freddie Kitchens and Sean McVay. Sean McVay was brought to Los Angeles to fix Jared Goff. Freddie Kitchens got the job because Baker said, hey, this is my guy. There's a power imbalance. Baker Mayfield's a young quarterback that needs to be challenged. Instead, he's working with his drinking buddy. And again, I'm not saying they drink together. I'm just saying they're too close, that the connection there, Baker played a part in him getting the job. Jared Goff didn't have a damn thing to do with Sean McVay getting the job. Sean McVay gets to tell him exactly what to do all the way up until they turn that microphone off in his helmet. There's a power.
But that's one way to headline it. The other way is, Baker, you weren't playing that well before Freddie started calling plays, and then you play insanely well. We're going to just keep rolling with that. Whether you guys.
He wasn't playing at all.
Yeah. So it's like, can't you go with that narrative, which is like.
Yeah, you could. As offensive coordinator, I would have kept rolling draws with him as offensive coordinator.
Hey, guys, this is Jason Whitlock, and I'm here to tell you about Noom. Some people think that all diet and weight loss plans are the same, but that's because they haven't tried Noom. Noom is a new, totally different approach to losing weight and getting healthy that uses psychology and small goals to help you change your habits, making it easy to lose weight and to keep it off for good. Noom combines the power of technology with real human support, offering as little or as much help as you want along the way. And since Noom is an app, it's always with you and easy to use, which makes it super easy to stay on track and reach your goals. It's just as simple to get started. Just go online, answer a few quick questions, and they'll create a personalized program just for you. Noom can help you lose your old way of thinking about food and dieting. So what do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/podcast. That's Noom.com/podcast and start your 14-day trial today.
Tony Gonzalez is back. Joining us now is Fox Sports NFL analyst Michael Vick. Let's move to Tampa, where the Daniel Jones era got off to a memorable start Sunday with the rookie quarterback leading the Giants back from down 18 to get the win, accounting for all four touchdowns along the way. Meanwhile, this year's top pick, Kyler Murray, fell to 0-3 with a sloppy loss against the Cam Newton-less Panthers. It's only been one game, but Jones' numbers already look much better than Murray's, topping the first overall pick in completion percentage, yards per attempt, and passer rating. Is it too soon to say Daniel Jones is better than Kyler Murray?
Not to me. We got to earn our money somehow, right? We can't wait to the end of their careers to say, hey, we got a new speak for yourself. No, we got to do this right now in the moment, whether we're right or where we're wrong. Comparable talent. When I say that, I mean you have to add up all their measurables, what you've seen on film. I think it's in a conversation where they're comparable. But then I go to what you have to go to when you see these two competing forces is the physics, like the levers. 6'5", 221, that can run versus the little engine that could, which I respect fully, but golly, I've been on this Daniel Jones bandwagon trying to tell people, stop booing this dude. This dude is different. And you can start to see this. One thing that jumped out is this play right here. Eli Manning in his life would have never made that play. And he had two rushing touchdowns in his game on top of two passing touchdowns. So you can just already see how he's having an impact on his squad. But more of that, the comparison between him and Kyler Murray, simply, it's the levers. He's just a bigger, more talented guy who's going to be there for the longer haul.
I'm going to say it's too early to say. Oh. And I got to say that from a quarterback's perspective. Now, if you ask me this 4 or 5 weeks from now, then I can give you a more definitive answer. But the win yesterday, overcoming the 18-point deficit, was very impressive. It was very impressive. But, you know, Kyler Murray has done some things that I thought, you know, I think has been really, really good. But Daniel Jones has looked even more impressive. More. You know, Kyler's got more snaps, so he should be doing a lot more. But at the end of the day, Daniel Jones is going to play with a chip on his shoulder. He wasn't the number one pick. He was picked, what, number 10?
Six.
Number six.
And booed.
But that
booed.
And booed. So that's going to play a part in how he approached the game. And he's always going to check on Kyler Murray and see what he's doing. He's always going to be in direct competition with him. And that's going to be something that he always try to do is prove that he should have been that number one pick. So it's a little too early to say. We'll see down the road.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, for the sake of television, and you're right, we got to go ahead and give an answer here.
Yeah.
If I had to pick right now, if you said, hey, you get to pick one of those two teams take for one. Your franchise, you got to take one, I'm taking Daniel Jones off of that one game. Just because I want a taller guy. I want a guy that can sling that rock, who can run with his legs. He seems like an awfully smart guy, too. Yep. Eli protege, except Eli 2.0. Kyler, watching that game, and maybe it's because of the system and the way they're protecting him right now, but I think at the beginning he was, I saw at one point 14 of 16. So he's completing the ball, but it was like 81 yards. There's nothing really going over the top. And he did throw one over the top, but the guy dropped it. Right. But still, those dinking and dunking, that's not going to win you football games in the NFL. And the little, you know, he's like a little Mighty Mouse running around there, like a little flea. They can't catch him. I don't like that. It's just that, that's going to be fun for a while, but that could catch up. Robert Griffin III has scarred me. Because one injury and the whole career could go a different direction when you got these running quarterbacks. I like this. This Daniel Jones, he's going to be in New York for a long time.
Look, Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech, the reason he got fired is because his offense worked great between the 20s. It had problems in the red zone. You go look at Arizona so far, they're not scoring points. And I think that offense, again, these NFL defensive coordinators couldn't wait to get a hold of Cliff Kingsbury's offense. It was great in college, but it didn't produce wins. It's not producing wins now. So that's another reason I think Daniel Jones is in a better situation with a more experienced group of NFL coaches. I have a bias against quarterbacks under 6'3". You know, it is what it is. Look, there are exceptions.
There's exceptions.
Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, there's always exceptions. But I like quarterbacks over 6'3". The thing that impressed me about Daniel Jones, you got to remember, Saquon Barkley went down with an ankle.
All right.
Yeah.
Odell Beckham Jr. got traded this past offseason. Right. He carried his team in a game where Jameis Winston and Tampa Bay did some great things and put up a lot of points. Daniel Jones was the best player on his offense and maybe the best giant on the field yesterday. No Saquon Barkley, no OBJ anymore.
Oh,
that was very impressive for a young guy to put the team on his back.
And I love the fact that you said carried his team. It was an 18-point comeback. Think about this. He's 1-0 with 18-point comebacks. Guess what Eli is? Guess what Eli is in 18-point comebacks? 0-44. 0-44 in the same situation. Eli has never, and I talked about those individual plays and talking about 19-yard runs for touchdowns. Eli's never done that. And now Eli has never brought this team back from an 18-point deficit or greater. It's just different. And let's just be real. You keep talking about Kingsbury offense and the philosophy. The receiving core, Larry Fitzgerald's a Hall of Famer. But that shouldn't be what all you have. I mean, Christian Kirk's nice, good. He's putting up some numbers. Michael Crabtree, I'm just saying, for him to be the number one overall pick with a questionable philosophy from you, with assets that are not supreme, it's going to be difficult for the kid. So, to your point, let's wait a little bit. But for television,
But Tony just said something when he said, look, if I had to pick a guy today, I would pick Daniel Jones. Instantly, I thought about, okay, who's his quarterback coach? Who's his coach? Like, who's coaching him right now? Pat Shermer's been around the league for a long time, been in a bunch of different systems. So he's teaching different from what Cliff Kingsbury is doing. And that could be the difference in how we determine who's the best guy moving forward. It's a different offense for Daniel Jones, different offense for Kyler Murray with Cliff Kingsbury. So that could be the telltale factor in the end.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
People don't understand when I say this. There are studies about the bias for people 6'2" and over. They tend to be CEOs. They earn more money than people shorter than them. And I this is my thing about, and particularly with Kyler Murray, because it's so pronounced. He looks as big as Doug Flutie to me.
My teammate,
and,
my boy.
And I know Doug Flutie is the exception.
Was great.
And had some success. Great. But I just think it's hard to be a leader of big men when you're not.
And, I'm going to be honest. I wanted to be 6'5". 55 pounds. Like, I stopped at 6 feet, and I was like, "What did you do to me?" But you know, it was. You gotta use what you got, man. And
look, hell yeah.
To a point, if there's some truth to that, man, then look, I missed out on a lot.
Well, what would you? There's Muggsy Bowles, NBA. You know,
how many championships he won?
The championships. Who's the guy that won the dunk contest? 5'7", Spud Webb.
How many championships?
I'm just saying, when you're short, especially, it's hard. And I think that's probably why they do struggle when they get to the red zone. You can't see. Everything gets condensed and shorter down there. As a shorter guy, it's tough. So you're gonna have to do a lot of that spread out, and you know that's coming as a defense. So it's a little bit easier.
I'll be honest, man. It was times that I lost guys, lost receivers, lost defenders that I was supposed to look at in passing lanes being 6 feet. You know, it's a point.
All right, enough of this shortism.
Let's get off of that.
Speaking of Daniel Jones, that Giants-Bucks game was part of the Super 6 this weekend. Darnell, did anyone win Terry's 250 grand?
Man, so 13 fans missed the 250 Gs by one question. Still walked away with cash in their pockets. Terry should probably thank Coach Bill Belichick, though. When he took Tom Brady out the game and the Patriots' 30-0 lead was cut in half, 20,000 fans who guessed the Patriots would win by 22 or more points were bumped off the right answer. But as always, next week, so make sure you download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play Super 6 NFL Sunday for free for a chance to win $250,000 in Terry Bradshaw's money.
Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
Yes, sir. Let's move to Antonio Brown, who keeps creating more drama. After being released Friday, Brown had a lot of people wondering if he was going to retire, tweeting out, quote, "We'll not be playing in the NFL anymore. These owners can cancel deals, do whatever they want at any time. We will see if the NFLPA will hold them accountable. Sad they can just void guarantees any time, going on $40 million in 2 months. We'll see if they pay up." I want to ask you guys, do you think Brown should play again this year?
Allegedly, there's several teams interested in him, and I think that after the NFL has their investigation, I think sometime around Thanksgiving, there's going to be some teams that'll make a play for AB. I think it would be best for him as a human being if he didn't play this year, come back next year with a clean slate, hopefully a new attitude. I would like to see him focus on AB the rest of this year.
I hear you. It certainly smells like something's going on between the ears that needs to get corrected, to get fixed, to get aired out and addressed. But then I take a deep breath and say, what has AB really done? All this smoke, and then you get there and it's just one little match. Think about it. Two accusations that you're innocent of until you're proven guilty. You cursed out your GM in the same sports culture where I've seen guys knock out their teammates and to return back to play that same week. Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Steve Smith Sr. I could keep going. So then I look at, oh, you cursed out your GM, whatever. The point of this is, who am I to tell this dude that he doesn't need the game of football or the structure and the joy it provides him? Because we don't live in a parallel universe to understand what AB looks like without football. It's a lot of guesswork, but we don't know what he's going to turn into without football. So I don't feel like I'm qualified for that position.
I just think I agree with Whit. I think Tonio should take some time off, get away from the game of football, get away from what he's dealing with. You know, that's not going to go away. It's a personal issue, but, you know, life going to continue to go on.
Yeah.
And he has to make some changes. Obviously, there has to be some form of mentorship for him. And that's what I want to see out of Antonio. I want to see him sit this year out, gather himself, figure out what transpired, look back and say, okay, I could have done this better. I could do this better. You know, I shouldn't have done this. I need to apologize to this person, and this person. And then try to land on my feet next year. I think that's best case scenario for him. He's not going to be in his right mind. Team's got to be able to trust him. Your teammates got to be able to trust you. It's different when you go in that locker room. You just can't bounce around, you know, from team to team and think that your respect level is going to be there because everybody's reading and looking at what's going on.
One of the things I thought about this weekend, Mike, that I'm glad you're here, I can ask about, because, again, I tweeted out this weekend that I think there needs to be a spiritual awakening and understanding for Antonio. He talks about calling God and having a relationship with God. his behavior doesn't match up. He's mistreating people consistently. And I wonder if perhaps a relationship with Tony Dungy could be a benefit to Antonio Brown.
That would be amazing. A relationship with Tony Dungy would change his life dramatically. A relationship with me, and I'm speaking to Antonio directly, like, would be so much better than probably what you got in relationships that you have with other people. Not discrediting anybody, but I'm a qualified guy to say, look, I've learned from my mistakes. I've learned through other people, and they've helped me, and I can help him.
Mm. You know, it's interesting that when they talk about therapy and what really needs to be unveiled, people don't need to be fixed. They need to be understood. If you think about it, what happens is if you're misunderstood, you're on a forever mission for that, where other people are looking at it from a different perspective, right, just trying to correct the behavior. So
see it one way.
And Antonio has been on something, and it seems misaligned, but he's like, I want to be understood and taken for who I am.
Right.
So a lot of times when you deal with someone like this, you get caught up in content.
Yes.
I'm saying the right things, be around. He's caught up in context, right, which is completely different than that. If anyone's ever gotten in an argument with somebody and you're like, what is wrong with you? Yeah. It's because they are like, all you have to do is understand where I'm coming from.
Right.
That will be the fix.
Right.
So for Antonio, I'm not certain that taking him away is going to make him feel felt understood.
Right.
I think that will be the collective thought of fixing him,
yeah,
but not understanding him.
Football won't fix you. You know, I think football is just something that God has given us that allows us to be fruitful in our lives. And we work so hard to get to a certain point that, you know, we get to enjoy it, and it's what we work hard for. But your character is what's going to define you.
Say it.
You know, I think Antonio just has to figure out, like, where does my character lie? What can I do? How can I be a better person, better man? Got a lot of kids watching.
Mm.
A lot of people watching, man. Social media opens it up for everybody to pay attention. And I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing for him right now, but we got to figure out the medium for this man.
Yeah, but when you start and you galvanize this much success from nothing, I even have this spirit in me that I had to talk myself out of, which is, oh, I could go back to nothing, and it's right, all good, because that's, yeah, where I came from. And the problem with where Antonio is now, he's in rarefied air, and he's not feeling worthy and as qualified for where he is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's therapeutic. Yes, you need therapy. But last time I checked, his greatest therapy has been his occupation, been his opportunities.
And that may be why he needs a change, mm-hmm, because that's not providing the therapy. All of that applause, again, I say athletes are pretty much the only people, actors on Broadway or whatever, they get applauded on their job. They get all that adjulation and worship.
Yeah.
And AB's addicted to social media, which, yeah, to me, I was telling my brother earlier today that social media is like a church for people who self-worship. These celebrities that self-worship and are all into themselves. And people got upset with me yesterday because I was bothered when OBJ introduced himself last night. I'm OBJ, I am him. I was like, whoa, bro. Whoa. And for me, that hits my funny bone. And I hear OBJ talk about God, and I'm like, oh, you him, huh? But again, I get this mentality of self-worship that we're all into, all of us into it to some degree. And then you get addicted to social media, and that becomes your church of worshipers and followers.
Yeah.
And it deludes you, and it makes you start thinking you're better than other people. And so I hear you say about context. I want AB to understand the context of, hey, bro, just because you made a bunch of money doesn't mean you're special. God has blessed you, and you've overcome some incredible things. Smother yourself in humility right now, if possible. Don't let this money and the 2 or 3 million followers you have on Twitter and all fool you into believing that you are him. You're not.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I was saying take a step back from the game a little bit and just see what transpired in your life, what has happened, who's the reasoning for all of this. Because at the end of the day, I mean, it's us.
Like, yeah.
I mean,
man.
We walk the walk every day, man. We walk. Like, we put ourselves in some predicaments where at some point we have to defend ourselves, and at some point we have to, you know, pay up for what's happened. You know, so you can't never look at it like, look, man, it's somebody else's fault. You know, at the end of the day, it's your fault for whatever you're going through.
I would just, end with this. This is such a layered conversation. Identity and self-worth and how they're interwoven from people from humble beginnings, it is such an intricate issue.
Yeah.
Because you don't deeply feel you deserve what you got.
Right.
So when you get to that place where you have a lot, we see these implosions. We see these issues come up a lot of times, and he becomes self-defeated in everything he's doing. His greatest issue is the social media activation. His greatest issue is that he is narcissistic. He's believing, since I was born into humility and raised myself out of it, don't you dare tell me now that I need to be internally humble, when that, whatever fire that was, is what got me here. How do you calibrate that?
Michael Vick and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Let's move to the Panthers, who might have been without Cam Newton, but still dominated the Cardinals to get their first win of the year. Newton's replacement Kyle Allen had a huge game, and Cam has already been ruled out this week against the Texans, which could open the door for a QB controversy in Carolina. Cam struggled his way through the first two games, completing less than 60% of his passes and no touchdowns. Meanwhile, Allen completed 73% of his passes yesterday for 4 touchdowns and a passer rating more than double what Cam has done this year. All right, big question here, guys. Should the Panthers consider benching Cam for Kyle Allen? Keyword, consider.
Yes, they should consider it. Strongly consider it. And it's unfortunate because I am a Cam Newton fan. But this is a meritocracy. This is sports. And somebody's playing a lot better in this same system than somebody else. Let's just be real about it. In terms of the last 6 games played, 4 for Cam, 2 for Kyle Allen, 6 touchdowns for Kyle Allen. I think Cam has 2. You talk about games won. Kyle Allen's the one that's gotten them the win in the last 10 games, the 2 wins. Cam, 0-8. Like, now we have to strongly consider.
In the last 10 games?
Yeah.
They
won 2.
Yeah, they won 2, and it's
Kyle
been
Kyle Allen. Of them.
Right, right.
I mean, these are real things. And, you know, real facts things. Over feelings. Let's just real go. Things. I mean, I love me, Cam. Facts
things.
Over feelings. And they're upstairs talking about this. This is just real stuff.
Yeah.
This is hard to ignore. So consider, strongly consider it. Are you ready to pull the trigger? Not yet, but let's talk through this.
When you say the key word is consider, that's Ron Rivera's job to consider that. He has to. Now, what we talked about early, Lamar Jackson, when you play Arizona Cardinals and when Lamar Jackson and all these other teams, he just played Arizona Cardinals. Now, you play the Houston Texans. Can you win a game against the Houston Texans? Then you follow that up with the Jags and the Bucks. If he wins 2 of those 3 games, it's not consider. Yeah. It's a done deal.
No, if he wins next week.
You know what they're going to say?
Consider.
Cam, get 100%. Now, we're going to make sure Cam.
Yeah.
And so it's Ron Rivera's
97.9% right now.
Right. And so you have to, because you're doing the team a favor. And it is what it happens to everybody. At one point in time, if you're not performing, you're going to get replaced. And he's not performing. You can say he's injured, whatever it may be. He's not performing. Kyle Allen is right now.
Well, after I found out just recently that Cam only won, what, 1 game in the last 10 or whatever
no.
That stat
0.
Was.
0-8.
Oh,
yeah. Well,
that
word consideration really comes into play now. And I was going to say that, look, you, out of respect, and because we know what Cam can do, you let him play himself out of the position. But if this guy Kyle Allen goes and win another game or 2, then I know how this quarterback thing works. They'll be talking in the front office, and they'll, you know, everyone has a job to do, and everyone has to save their jobs, you know, at the end of the day. And Cam is no exception. You know, it's all about the better of the team. And if Cam can't get healthy, if he can't move the chains, if Cam can't be Cam, then that word consideration is going to turn into reality.
Well, I watch a lot of Carolina games last year, and Cam was put in position last year in that 6-game losing streak to win some of those games by the Carolina defense. The Carolina defense is championship worthy. Ron Rivera is trying to hold on to his job.
Yeah.
And that's what makes Kyle Allen viable. That defense, Ron Rivera trying to hold on to his job, and Cam's inconsistency. And let's just be clear here about Kyle Allen. Coming out of high school, this was as blue chip a stock as there was coming out of high school. Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M over-recruited and brought Kyler Murray in. That made him, Kevin Sumlin try to satisfy both, Kyler Murray and Kyle Allen. They both bounced on him. Because, oh, Cher, I didn't come, I'm a five-star guy. I didn't come here this year.
Number one quarterback in the country.
So both of them ended up bouncing on Texas A&M. Kyle Allen goes to Houston, doesn't play all as great as his, but this dude has talent.
Let me tell you how real this situation is, because I was in a situation like this. In Philadelphia, I pulled my hamstring and wasn't playing at my best. You know, not inconsistent, but could have been better. Pulled my hamstring, Nick Foles stepped in, won a couple games. Guess what? I never seen the field again. So this is the reality of what happens at the quarterback position. Like, look, Cam can't be selfish. You hurt, you got to say, listen, I can't do this. If not, they're going to make that decision for you. Or it's going to show you're going to get exposed somehow, some way. But when I was in Philadelphia, all it took was a couple wins, and I was on the bench, and I was, you know, a marquee player still at the time.
Let's talk about the fullness of the quarterback position. I have one more tangible number for you guys. What we saw out of Kyle Allen, what was that, his second start ever?
Yes.
Was the second highest passing rating in team history behind one game from Cam. Cam, you played how many games? And this dude's played two, and he's already number two all time. That's a tangible. Here's the intangibles, and let's all be real about it. You and I had this discussion, TJ, last week about, oh, it doesn't matter in the moment when you do some things because it doesn't add up, it doesn't count. And I told you, oh, it always adds up and it counts. Cam Newton is in a position where leadership has always been questioned. From the old days, we're putting the towel over his head to always in the ISO cam by himself to now, you know, with the outfits. I'm not going against any of that. I'm just saying it's always been a question of his leadership. Now, if you give me a guy that potentially can match you in the tangibles and then there's no competition in the intangibles and question the leadership, they're motivated to move on from you. That's why it does count at the end how you display yourself, to move on to a clean slate quarterback who's going to do things the right way. So I don't even think he has a lot of people upstairs pom-pomming for him because of that consideration. So
it's going to all play itself out, really. It really will. They play the Houston Texans this week, and that's a really good team. If he wins that game, it's a wrap for him. It's over. But that just – you had faced adversity. So when you were in Philadelphia and that happened to you, you had already faced adversity
and
before, you're going to put the team first. This is going to be foreign territory for Cam Newton. He's not going to know how to handle this.
Mike, I don't want to put you in a pickle, but I'm going to ask you the question because I've been on this campaign ever since Cam showed up with the scarf wrapped around his head. I didn't like it from a leadership standpoint.
I didn't like it.
You can't lead?
I mean, look, you got everybody watching you, Cam, including your teammates. And look, this is not – you know, this is not a fashion show. This is football. You know, I mean, throw the suit on. The hats was cool. He got away with that. But, I mean, I respect Cam for what he do as a football player. Look, I respect him because he loves fashion. But, you know, it's a different demeanor, a different approach you got to take as far as your appearance and everything, man. Everything plays a factor.
At the quarterback position. If he's a wide receiver.
There's nothing wrong with what he's doing. But,
if he's a wide receiver, or, again, like, if you want to make fashion statements away from the football locker room, no one cares.
And that's to my point. My greater point is I think if you were on that wall, fly on the wall listening, that's what they're saying. Hey, man, we got a chance now to not only have comparable production, but a guy who's not going to put us in the conversation and noise and criticism of whatever Cam is bringing.
But look, the rest of the team, the team is going to rally around this because we got a chance now. Games are competitive. They're going to rally around
them. Go to the NFC South. Drew Brees is down.
Winnable.
Matt Ryan's playing like trash.
Jameis Winston is.
Tampa Bay. You have Ron Rivera sitting there going, I can save my job. Yep. And you can't. Luke Kuechly and these guys are like, hey, man, we over here balling out. We want the results.
What I'm praying happens is this. Cam sees what's going on, pays attention because he has to at the quarterback position, come back and lights it up. That's the best case scenario. That's the only thing.
But there's a problem with that. If Cam comes back too soon, he's not going to be Cam. Right. Cam waits too long, he ain't going to get a chance to be Cam.
He need to get back on that field regardless. Whatever happens, he need to get back on that field.
We saw how that looked.
You need to get back behind that
with a haircut and without the scarf when he comes back.
Oh, come on, Cam. God. Let's do this, Cam. Let's go. Let's go, Cam.
I ain't got
you can
that.
Do it. You can do it, baby.
Just ball.
Cam fan.
I want to address Stairgate, the terrifying 1 second that Bill Belichick stared directly into the eyes of Warzone reporter Dana Jacobson. Like Spygate and Deflategate, Stairgate is yet another stain on the legacy of football coach Bill Belichick. Before the Patriots-Jets games, Jacobson asked a simple and necessary question of the Patriots coach, and Belichick responded with a death stare that melted the soul of blue check Twitter. Take a look for yourself, but let me warn you before playing the clip. Many viewers may find Belichick's glare obscene, objectionable, and highly sexist. Parental discretion is advised. Fox Sports is not responsible if your day is ruined after viewing this content.
I think I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, what was the final straw with Antonio Brown?
Yeah, we're focused on the Jets today.
Thank you, Coach.
Is everyone okay? Scientists compare the Belichick death stare to the Vulcan mind meld that Spock used during the Star Trek TV and movie series.
Ooh.
In that 1 second stare down, Belichick, without seeking the consent from Jacobson, climbed into the deep recesses of her mind and violated the very essence of her being. Blue check Twitter was appropriately outraged.
Man.
Bleacher Report's Taylor Rook said Belichick's stare was wholly unprofessional and so was not responding to Jacobson's thank you. Twitter's Jamel Hill tweeted, the stare was weak and unprofessional. The MLB Network's Robert Flores added, the old man thinks he scares people. The New York Post's Andrew Marchand scolded the Patriots coach. It is Belichick's tough guy stare down of Dana Jacobson that I find particularly weak. He is in a position of power and is a really bad look. Let's take another look at Belichick's death stare. Again, I warn those of you at home to take the necessary precautions before viewing this video. You may find the content objectionable.
I think I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, what was the final straw with Antonio Brown?
Yeah, we're focused on the Jets today.
Thank you, Coach.
This is where we're at in America. 1 second of direct eye contact from a man who smiles just once a year for 3 seconds after the Patriots win the Super Bowl, is worthy of public rebuke. Unfortunately, Dana Jacobson doesn't even realize Belichick's disrespected her. This morning, she tweeted, I did my job yesterday. Coach did his. End of story. Social media and sports radio can continue the discussion. I'm going to go get ready for my wedding Saturday. I love this story. It explains why we try every day to make this show a safe space for football fans and sane people. A place where you can feel safe laughing at social media robots bothered by eye contact and other forms of toxic masculinity. All right, more Speak for Yourself after this.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Houshmandzadeh's back. Let's move to Philadelphia, where Carson Wentz and the Eagles found a way to lose to the Lions at home yesterday, with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside dropping what could have been the winning touchdown, one of 7 drops on the day. But the receivers weren't the only ones to drop the ball. The entire offensive line decided to stop blocking for Carson Wentz on a play in the fourth quarter that went viral on social media. Marcel, I'm going to just say, when I saw this, I was outraged. Is this something or nothing, these offensive linemen standing around?
It's neither. It's everything. Ooh, Carson Wentz. What's going to be your Christmas gift this year for them boys?
Because it better be something good.
Better than them shotguns he gave them a couple years ago. That ain't going to get it. I'm going to say this. This is my guesswork to this situation because I actually am familiar with something like this before I get to that. A 3-man rush to an offensive line tells them one thing. We have to block longer. Why? Because there's 8 defenders in the secondary. So their mental clock should adjust, and it has. We have to block forever. And when you see them not block at all or little, you know something else is agitating them. I'll tell you the story that really makes me reflect on this moment is when Ryan Leaf, folklore in San Diego with the Chargers, was Ryan Leaf had agitated so many of his teammates that there were plays where the offensive lineman would even tell the D lineman, you ready for yours? You about to get it. Ole! And let him just go tear Ryan Leaf off just to make a point. I'm not sure if this is this, but I'm looking at it. I don't even see people rushing to his rescue when he's on the ground. I need to see that full extended clip, but to that point, something's going on in the psyche of those old linemen because that doesn't look like full effort.
Something that Carson Wentz is doing in that locker room is not resonating with the rest of those guys. If you watch that over, it's almost a six-man protection because Darren Sproles chips. Uh-huh. He helps the right, the whole left side of the line literally stops. So, in essence, you got two guys blocking one all across the board. And what you just said, it's a three-man rush. It's going to take time for guys to get open because you got eight in the backfield
yeah.
or in a secondary. And so I don't know what he's doing. Hmm. I don't know if he's going out to eat with guys. Hmm. I don't know if he's communicating with guys and downtime in the locker room. But whatever he's doing is not working. He's going to have to get this fixed.
I want to defend Carson Wentz here, just to be clear, because I don't want to put you guys in a bad light because I don't think you're trying to be malicious towards Carson Wentz.
No.
But that's on these other guys.
Oh, 100%.
They stopped and are standing there. And to me, it may have nothing to do with Carson Wentz. It may have to do with the Philadelphia Eagles have been satisfied from the moment they won that Super Bowl 2 years ago. That, to me, looks like a group of guys. We won our Super Bowl.
And you know what's
this
crazy?
Dude back here, the quarterback, he was sitting the bench or injured somewhere when Nick Foles won it for us. And it's like Carson Wentz is hungrier than the rest of the Philadelphia Eagles. If I'm Doug Peterson, I'm shredding my offensive line coach, and I'm fining all of these players. That's on tape. The eye in the sky never lies. No matter what your feelings are towards Carson Wentz, you never want to be caught on tape in a football game standing around like that.
And it's 27-17. The fourth quarter just starts. You're still in the game.
Yeah.
Like, if you really watch that, believe it was a left guard. He sees the Detroit lineman just taking off. And he just watches like, oh, the play's still going. If he's taking off, it got to be going.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say they're satisfied.
Yeah.
But it's something to where they're not playing as hard as they should be playing because normally often they're going to play to the whistle. And then when they do that, they're going to run back there and at least help him up. They didn't even sprint to him.
I agree.
So that's not a good look.
Issue is, they were in chorus with that issue. That's why I slightly disagree with you. And they knew it was going to land on you. When people take shots at you to me, directly to me, and try to take a shot at you, they never get in the response they think they deserve. They never get in the response from me. And I'm always going to look out for you. When they stop looking out for the quarterback, it's an issue, bro.
Man, it was like synchronized swimming. They was all together.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Patrick Mahomes. All right, Uncle Jimmy, you got your big dummy of the day?
You know?
You know?
You know?
Yes, sir. Big dummy of the day. Yeah. Go to the person that's set up here with Michael Vick setting up here talking about, I don't like a less than a 6-foot quarterback.
Yeah.
In the hell would your life be if the women that you try to date say, I don't like a man over 3 bills.
I have heard that. All right.
It was awesome.
Let's talk Patrick Mahomes.
He heavy, girl. He heavy.
Who put up another huge game yesterday against the Ravens. Mahomes is on record pace so far this year and has been doing it without Tyreek Hill, who's still hurt Marcellus.
Yes.
Do you think Mahomes needs Tyreek to repeat as MVP?
He doesn't need him. It'll be nice. It'll help separate him from the pack. And it's early in the season, so someone else is going to emerge to give him a true contender in terms of MVP voting. But he doesn't need him, but it'd be nice to get a little space.
So you were probably like, you weren't even born yet, 1973, Secretariat out there blowing out the field.
Hi-ya.
It doesn't matter. They don't need Tyreek Hill. No one can catch Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't need Tyreek Hill.
Wow.
Uncle Jimmy, you agree with me?
Look here, first of all, nephew, let me tell you something. You've got the question all wrong. The question should be, can the Chiefs win the Super Bowl without Tyreek Hill?
Ah, I love that.
See, right now, let me tell you something. Out here amongst the Chiefs' kingdom, it's Super Bowl or bust. And anything less would be uncivilized. You know, right now, we're in a situation to where the Chiefs are, we're experiencing what's called an embarrassment of riches on the offense.
That's true.
Because Andy Reid, of course, is an utter embarrassment on defense.
That
see,
is true.
See, you giggling, but see, I understand. See, you ain't never had a problem of having an embarrassment of riches in your life. That's you know, true. You ain't never been lathered up to your neck in gravy and blue M&Ms to your heart's content. You know, have you heard the phrase that the whole is greater than the sum of the product?
The sum
part,
of the parts.
Or some of his parts. You get what I'm saying.
What is this?
I do, yeah. Hour
well, Uncle, Jimmy, Uncle Jimmy got a saying something like that.
Yeah, what is it?
The more plentiful the beauty, the less need there is. The more plentiful the booty, less plentiful, the less need for booty.
One more time, Uncle. One more time. Clear it up.
Try that one. The beauty, the less need for booty.
No, I. The who?
More plentiful the beauty?
The look, more. I'm trying to tell you, the less beauty, you got more booty. Nobody, no, it's gonna work like that, you're gonna be okay. The greater the beauty, the less need for booty. No, that's wrong. Bottom line is, you're gonna need Tariq Hill a lot more than you're gonna need me.
Is he the booty or the beauty?
Yeah. Look here, right now you got Patrick Mahomes. That's the beauty.
Okay, yeah. That's a good point.
Hey, man, have y'all ever looked at Andy Reid when that offense is out there, when that defense is out there on the field?
Yeah.
He don't even look at the defense. That's he true. Sitting up here holding up a Waffle House menu like this is. He talking to Patrick Mahomes like, look here, Pat, I know you've already thrown 7 touchdowns. And Patrick's like, it's actually been 8. Well, we're going to need you to throw a couple more, Pat. Well, can't the defense do anything, coach? Andy's like, look here, you got to understand. The days of the defense carrying the Chiefs are over, Pat. Eric Berry's gone. Justin Houston's gone. Derek Thomas has been gone for a long time, and you've got to face this fact. Neil Smith is not going to pass Nettie Bonnick's so he's not coming back.
Respect. Hey,
stop.
Bottom
we got to get to our approval
rating. You need
rating.
Tariq Hill.
And by the way,
some booty.
I think the statement is, the more plentiful the booty, the less need for beauty. But anyway.
Did they say that in the Bible?
I think
so. The way he read it.
I got him in GOAT status, 87, Patrick Mahomes.
Damn.
Yeah. I move him up 4 points in all-time greatest, 1 point in job performance.
Yeah, he's a GOAT. My wife even thinks he looks cuter this year. That's what an MVP will do for you. The boys out
there. All right,
there,
the internet agrees with both of us. They have him in GOAT status, although All-Star was very close. Marcellus, I don't know if you saw this last night.
Mm.
The Emmys were going on during Sunday Night Football.
Yeah.
And the most beautiful person at the Emmys was our very own Rachel Bonetta.
See you, Rach.
Amazing.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.